This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Welcome to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with Chris Francis, Elijah Kim, and this is a new Cavaliers today. Pretty exciting news. The Cavs got a third All-Star to play with their phenom second-year player, Evan Mobley, in a trade I don't think any of us saw coming after it was had it appeared that Cavs had walked away and that it was just a matter of time before the Knicks and the Jazz completed a Mitchell to the Knicks trade. And I think the Knicks were not willing to pay the iron price or the Ainge price as Danny Ainge extracts picks out of teams he trades with, like he's holding them in a vice grip. And the Cavs were, and so they were able to make a trade of Colin Sexton, Lauri Markkanen, and Okai Agbaji, if I pronounce that right, three first-round picks and two pick swaps along with that, unprotected first-round picks for Donovan Mitchell and Donovan Mitchell only. Chris, gut reaction there.
I just popped the cork on my tequila. Because I'm celebrating the trade. Yeah, I mean, this is, first of all, it's unexpected. Totally, I agree. Like, I can't believe it actually happened. Especially, like you said, I mean, there was a report that, you know, they had talked, it never went anywhere, and then that was it, you know. And then there was speculation, well, they may have just been trying to be facilitator of a different trade, you know, facilitator of a possible Knicks trade or whatever. But yeah, I mean, like, everybody's saying that basically the Knicks dropped the ball and the Cavs swooped in and got themselves a 25-year-old three-time All-Star and in the prime of his career on three-year contract.
Top scorer on a West Conference Finals team last year.
Yeah, and had one of the most historic playoff performances in NBA history. I'm pretty sure that the only person that scored more is like Jordan in a playoff game. So, wow. Yeah, now they and so like now they have a fully realized like this is what they were hoping Colin Sexton was going to turn into. You know, this is what they were hoping, like a second point guard that was uber athletic, you know, and that could guard up and you would reap the offensive benefits of the passing, scoring and shooting out of the guard position. And that's what Donovan Mitchell does. You know, he can shoot the ball. He can pass the ball. I mean, he does all these things better than Sexton for sure. He can defend better than Sexton. So they just got a complete package player, you know, at the shooting guard position, for basically two role players, and a rookie that was, obviously a limited, you know, a limited role playing rookie. So, you know, I'm excited. Like, I can't believe it happened. I think, this is one of the moves this, you know, like everybody was talking about consolidation, like they consolidated and got themselves a guard, you know, they finally solved the shooting guard position. So I'm ecstatic. I can't believe it's going to happen. I just can't wait to see it.
Eli, how do you follow that?
By being a little different.
A little more overall, pessimistic?
Yeah. I mean, overall, I think I see the vision and I'm okay with it. I think for me, as a guy who crunches numbers and looks for value on a day-to-day basis in my everyday work job, I don't think this is great value, personally. I think it's kind of a steep price to pay. But
yeah, three picks in this economy?
Yeah, and I think it just hurts even more that the Cavs kind of started the trade a disgruntled superstar with a lot of contract year left in Kyrie Irving to Danny Ainge, and they only got one pick, Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder, and now they have to turn around and give control of five draft picks for arguably a player who's probably not as good as Kyrie was at that time. So
I think that's a very fair gripe.
Yeah, so that being said, I'm a little surprised that the Jazz didn't take some of these reported Knicks offers. I mean, I would have taken like RJ Barrett and three first-round picks and Quentin Grimes. I think that's like a home run of a deal. That's better than any of the players you're getting from the Cavs. So I was a little surprised, but I guess that does show that the Cavs really do believe in this core, and I'm all on board on making a big swing and kind of announcing to the league that you really do believe in the core four now, as I think we should call them. So Garland, Mitchell, Mobley, and Allen. So I get it. I think the Cavs are one of the few teams that would have the defensive infrastructure to make it work with two small guys. And I tweeted this earlier. It's not the height. It's about talent. Even though Mitchell is short, he has better defensive numbers and better defensive film and a better physical traits to play defense, which is, was the concern with Sexton. So overall, I think I'm good to okay with this. I'm excited that there is another All-Star, obviously, that plays for the team we root for. But again, I think a part of me to make this like a home run deal would have been to somehow get rid of LeVert, to further uncog that jam between the two and three. And obviously I think the Jazz really wanted Markkanen, but if the Cavs could have added maybe another pick or a few seconds to use LeVert's money instead of Markin, and I would feel even better about this trade, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. To me, and Chris and I were talking about this before you got on, and Chris's line was that, other than between all the rumored players coming from the Knicks and all the rumored players coming from the Cavs, Lauri Markkanen is the best one. And obviously, that's why Danny Ainge wanted him. I'm with you. I don't know how you let Danny Ainge screw you twice inside of 10 years in trades. But I also understand that, the price of elite talent has risen very steeply in the NBA. I actually think this will get addressed in the next CBA. I think they're going to get rid of a lot of these pick swaps. Because I think we're literally getting into Ted Stepien territory with the amount of, there's going to be four or five teams that control the draft in the next 5 years, because all these teams have just traded massive amounts of picks and pick positioning to these teams. And there's going to be teams like the Lakers that literally will just be in a talent acquisition desert, if you will, in some ways, when it comes to building through the draft. So, but regardless of that, I'm sad to see Markkanen go. He was definitely one of my favorite Cavs last year. I don't think there's any doubt that he was the fourth best Cav for Cleveland last year, and oftentimes a third best Cav, especially when Mobley kind of hit the rookie wall and Lauri started out the season pretty slow and wasn't shooting well and just got better as the season went on. I also am bummed that he's going to an absolutely crap situation in Utah where they're blowing up the team. And I don't think Danny Ainge values players or people at all. I think he's kind of a dirtbag. So I'm not a big fan. And I hope for failure for that organization as long as Danny Ainge is there. I've had less and less respect for Ainge as the years have gone on. So I'm hoping they blow all their draft picks and that the Cavs come out smelling like roses. But it's a lot of upside for the Jazz too. I mean, if Colin Sexton balls out next year and is scoring in the high 20s and averaging 5 or 6 assists, which he has every ability to do if they force feed him the ball, which I don't see anybody else on that team scoring that much. It's a big deal, but you know, and I think we're going to talk about this a little bit later. The hole at the three at the small forward position, which you alluded to a little bit, is pretty palpable now. And I thought Lord did a great job and it really kind of meshed with the Cavs' identity as this big three. And now they don't have that. And I think it's going to change the way they play defense. I'm kind of very concerned about the pressure it's going to put on Mobley and Allen on the backside of the defense. And, you know, Garland and Mitchell are not very switchable players defensively. And Okoro has not been great at that. And I don't know if they have anybody that can kind of fill that small forward spot defensively or offensively right now. So that'll be really interesting to see what happens. I don't know. I guess, Chris, any rebuttal?
Guys, come on. Yeah, what the heck, guys?
Well, I'm not trying to be down. Jeez. I'm just – I guess my big thing is I've never – the like, only
literally
time –
literally the whole NBA sphere is basically saying the Cavs robbed this situation. And then, you know, that's what's interesting to me is, like
– who is the NBA sphere, though?
I'm talking about just like at large, like fans of other teams that I talk to and also like pundits and media types or whatever that cover the national news or whatever.
I'm actually like surprised
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because like Bobby Marks, John Hollinger, Nate Duncan, they all, and even, you know, David Thorpe, they like all crap on the Cavs all the time. But they actually love this move for them. And I just don't. It's just weird that this is the move they really like. And like all the other moves, even with the great season last year, the great unexpected season, like they were very pessimistic on the overall outlook. But now they've like all changed their tunes and they're super positive about this move, which is kind of interesting to me.
Well, it's a star-driven league.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Donovan Mitchell is a star, you know, like a bona fide like playoff performer. Like, he can be, I mean, he carried the Jazz. I mean, like, seriously, like, it was him. That was the reason why they were doing anything in the playoffs or even getting to the playoffs. So, but now you're putting him in a situation where he's got not just an all-star center, he's got an all-star point guard now in the, you know, a 21-year-old, 22-year-old point guard who's already been an all-star getting him the ball. Like making sure that he's getting the ball,
and a phenom in Mobley.
Yeah, exactly. You have a phenom in Mobley who's a defensive player of the year candidate already at year two. You know, and along with you know, and that's not the only 7-footer that could guard the rim. It's Jared Allen as well, who's an all-star, 24 years old.
Yeah, and arguably by some analytics measures was the Cavs' best player last season.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a legitimate argument that Jared Allen's better than Rudy Gobert based on Jared Allen's offense. Like, Allen can actually score and do it at a high level, just as high a level as Gobert, but he can actually handle more usage. He can actually, you know, take some guys' mismatches one-on-one offensively, whereas Gobert cannot. Like, he is awful on the offensive end, unless it's a dunk. So,
well, I would say the other side of that is he's more of a connector too. You know, he can move the ball a little better. Like you said, he can put it on the floor, do a post up. He definitely.
Yep.
He doesn't just finish plays; he connects plays. So
and yeah, with that, yeah, the big passing. How many times did we see them drop dimes off to each other at the rim?
Yeah,
you know,
and I kind of think that's a good place to take a pause here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what this trade looks like on the floor for the Cavs. So we'll be right back, and nice. And Eli and I will try not to be so melancholy. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith here with Eli Kim and Chris Francis. And Eli, who starts at the three for the Cavs on the roster right now? Like, who's the ideal offensively and defensively as far as you're concerned?
I think right now for me, it's ironic because Chris and I already had a conversation about this on my drive home today. But for me, if I had my choice, I think it would be Dean Wade. And I know that's
Jimmy Dean.
It might be a little counterintuitive, but my rationale is that in that three spot, we should try to simplify that role as much as possible. It should be a catch and shoot role because you already have two great ball handlers in Mitchell and Garland. And then, you know, you want a guy who could shoot because obviously spacing the floor is key for Garland and Mitchell to create opportunities and also make their own shots as well. So I'm leaning Dean Wade. My second choice is probably Okoro. And I mean, sensing the theme, my third choice is probably even Jetty Osman over like LeVert. Not saying that those guys are better players than LeVert in a vacuum, but I just think for the Cavs, finding a guy who's a true glue guy in that role is kind of would be the best move for the long term for the season and how it looks like on the court. Because I think you don't want to have too many cooks in the kitchen when you have two Michelin star chefs already in the starting lineup. So that's my take.
Hey man, you've watched Iron Chef. You know they always have them celebrity sous chefs. It's always an all star lineup. So no, but I get it. I get what you're saying. I've kind of gone back and forth a lot. I'll give you another option. What if you make Kevin Love a starter again? What if your all-star three is your sophomore phenom? Is that a possibility?
For me, I think I'd be open to trying it out. I just think the only question / problem I have is Kevin Love he's a cone. Like Patrick Beverly said about CP3, he's a cone. So I'm just a little worried that if Mobley, Love, and Allen are the starting front court, that teams will be able to game plan easily against that and like start a really small four and make it tough for the Cavs to defend out on the perimeter and get torched from the three. I don't hate the idea, but if maybe Love was a little bit earlier in his career, I think I would like to give that a serious shot, but I just don't think he's physically capable to do that at this age.
That's a fair assessment. And, you know, one of my regrets about this trade is the guy I really wanted from Utah was Jared Vanderbilt because he can shoot a little. He's super young, super athletic, but he's a ridiculously good rebounder. And the Cavs could really use some rebounding. One of my worries about, you know, this Cavs lineup is Mitchell is a decent rebounder for his size and obviously much better than Sexton, who was was not a good rebounder at all. And Okoro has not shown himself to be a great rebounder so far. And LeVert, his numbers are okay, but I'm with you. I don't think LeVert really fits. I think LeVert will, especially early in the year, be the backup point guard. And I think, you know, two of those, if I'm the Cavs, two of Mitchell, LeVert, and Sexton are going to be on the court at all times early in the season. And then, you know, with Neto getting some slop duties. And then you know, Rubio picking up the slack as the season goes on. I don't, and I think this means Okoro is probably going to strictly play the three again. I don't know, Chris, what do you think of what we talked about so far? I guess my first question to you is, can Mobley play the three?
Well, oh yeah. I mean, definitely. I think it's possible. I think he already has, you know, if I'm not mistaken from basketball, thanks to Basketball Reference, I'm pretty sure he has played some small forward, and I could see him continue to try and play small forward on the Cavs. And the idea that Eli had that I was intrigued by, and it's a little, like he said, it's very counterintuitive, but I am very curious to see if possibly Chetty can fit in with that group because of his shooting, because of the simplified role that they'd need from that position. It would be interesting to see if Chetty can actually eat some minutes in that role. I'm with Eli. Like, I think Dean Wade, if he's healthy, like, it's Dean Wade's definitely the guy, in my opinion. Like, you know, I think he showed enough last season, and you know, the eye test meets the analytics. Like, the lineups, the starting lineups with Dean Wade were incredible last year, if I'm not mistaken. So like, Dean Wade's the obvious choice, but I just wonder if Chetty might actually fit in there just because of all the open threes that he's going to get, you know, or, you know, and being able to focus on just being a perimeter defender, not having to guard up with fours and stuff like that. I think, you know, those are the two most intriguing ones. I agree with you that I think Okoro's in line, and even Karis maybe. Like, that's the thing is, I wonder, and I don't know what you guys think, but I like, how much three do you think Caris LeVert is playing this season? Like, how much now that the move's been made, now Laurie, an option has been removed at the three, how much do you think they're going to try Caris LeVert at the three?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, Caris LeVert has played the three before. I think he was a three fairly regularly early in his career for Brooklyn. I don't hate the idea. My problem with it is he's a guy who holds the ball a while, and he's very herky jerky, and a lot of his moves are real ISO. And if you're the Cavs, that doesn't really make sense with that starting lineup when you've got two fantastic pick and roll guards along with two fantastic pick and roll bigs. Like, he's just doesn't make a ton of sense there at the three. I think what I said, where he's going to be the third guard a lot of times, makes a million times more sense. I mean, Isaac Okoro.
That's a good point.
You know, Chetty and Okoro and Wade are all going to be content to fire up corner and above the break threes. I don't think there's anything that is going to prevent that. I really don't see LeVert starting. I would be surprised, to be honest with you. Unless it was like a token starter where he just kind of subs out after 5 minutes. What about you, Eli? What do you think happens to LeVert?
I agree. I think LeVert probably is your third guard. But I guess one gripe I do have about this trade is I kind of wish we had this trade earlier in the offseason, because the Cavs could have definitely restructured how they attacked free agency. And, you know, I guess in my mind, as the pessimist, most pessimistic of the group here, I feel like if the Cavs knew that they were going to get Donovan Mitchell this offseason, I'm not sure they would have brought Rubio back, to be honest. And I think they might have, you know, tried to go all in for Kyle Anderson as their big free agency pickup. And I think that would have really made the team pretty a little bit more balanced. I think, you know, the Cavs are very top heavy at the smalls and the bigs.
I actually think the opposite. I think that the Cavs signing Rubio was a reason why Donovan was open to coming to Cleveland, because they're clearly close from Utah days.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Their relationship is good, but like the fit in Utah, I don't think was supremely great. I mean, Rubio only lasted there a season, right? So
I think two.
Okay.
They were good though, weren't they? They made the playoffs.
Yeah, right? They had good plus minus. Their defense was great. And I think
there we go.
Yeah, I think if I look at it from the cast, if I'm trying to beat Kobe Altman, I think the way he's looking at it is the Cavs were top five defense last year, but a bottom five offense. I think this move gets your offense to probably middle of the pack, maybe like in the teens.
Hopefully top 15.
Yeah, hopefully top 15.
Hopefully top 10.
But even if you're in the top, let's say, 15, 16, 17, that's a dramatic improvement. And I don't think your defense is going to slip that much because you're basically you're keeping your two best defensive players entrenched in the lineup. So I think that's how he's thinking. And I can get that overall picture for sure. It gets worth the swing on that. But I just think that there still kind of is a weird logjam on the Cavs. They have a lot of guys who aren't a 3-and-D guys, and that's like what they've missed, and they just still continue to need that. Even
they have three, and they have and D, but they really don't have a lot in the same player. Like Dean Wade, like you guys talked about, is probably the closest that they have on the team, and he's clearly, never done it in extended minutes over the course of a whole season.
Correct.
Yeah. No, I mean it's a conundrum, but I mean, this is a long-term project, right? Like they weren't going to solve every problem, in offseason, especially with a core this young, I just saw a roster of the ages and it's like 21, 22, 24 years old. Donovan Mitchell is going to be the oldest guy at 25 years old.
Yeah, I mean, other than, elder statesman Kevin Love, Chetty Osmond is an old guy on this team.
Karis LeVert's
27, isn't he? Like 27?
LeVert's an old guy, too. He's at 28 years old.
Yeah, as well as, Brook Lopez, the crazy old man and they bring out of the cave when to scare the young guys. Yeah. So one of the questions that I have, I've been thinking a lot about what the offense looks like. We can talk about the defense, but the offense is going to be really interesting because I think at times both Mitchell and Garland are going to have to play off the ball. Well, not have to. I mean, there's only one ball. I think Garland probably does that a little bit better because he's such a great spot up shooter. But I also think you'll see Mitchell cutting from the wing a lot too. But the other thing is like I talked about, they're just so both such ridiculously good pick and roll players that they're really going to be able to match up Hunt. I think that's one of the things that I really look at is they were just not able to
attack. Now you're talking, Nate. You're talking, baby.
I think one of the things that is a vision for this move is Trae Young whooped him in the playoffs last year. And a lot of that blame went on Lauri Markkanen, which I think was completely unfair because they were starting Okoro at the two or starting LeVert. I can't remember which one. LeVert. They started LeVert, but he had foul trouble. I think they're going to totally match up Hunt and destroy guys like Trae Young in the postseason. Like if you are a bad defensive guard, the Cavs are going to own you. I think it puts Miami in trouble, honest with you.
Speak on it, Nate.
Yeah, I think it puts Miami in trouble, and that's why you have to have shooting on the floor so teams can't just zone up on you. The other thing is there was some footage of how great Colin Sexton's floater is. And part of the reason he's so good at getting by guys, but the other reason his floater is so good is once he gets to the paint, nobody can come to the nail because he's got Mobley and Allen behind him for those lobs. Now you stick, Mitchell on the wing for a kick out, or you run it the other way with Garland in the corner or Mobley in the corner. And as long as that other guy that's sharing the court with you is a competent wing three-point shooter, that is ridiculously hard offense to stop. And I would say the other thing that they need from those lineups is screen setting. And, you know, freeing guys up without the ball is something they didn't do great last year. And that's one thing that I think a Ricky Rubio helps you tremendously. I think Caris LeVert's minutes go way down when Rubio comes back, because I think Rubio is such a great fit with both those guys for what he does offensively and defensively. So I'm super excited to see what it looks like offensively. I don't know. What about you, Eli? Any insight into what the offense looks like? And I think after we come back, we'll talk about the D.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think the goal is, instead of kicking out to Isaac Okoro in the corner, what if you're kicking it out to Darius Garland in the corner, you know, or Donovan Mitchell in the corner? And it doesn't really even have to be three-point shooting. Those guys are so smart and good with the ball that they can create opportunities for everybody, including themselves. I mean, his numbers actually surprised me. I thought he was kind of a chucker and had bad percentages from three, but he's up to like 36% on like almost 9 attempts a game. So, you know, he's demonstrated in his career that he can shoot the three on the dribble, off the dribble.
I hope he brings some of that Utah three happy offense.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that the offense is going to really run around those two guards, taking turns and creating mismatches for the rest of the team. And I think Allen and Mobley are going to get a ton of easy buckets, whether it be on lobs or just simple cuts to the basket in rotation. And the only piece they need is a three-point shooting guy who's like 6'8 and who can play a little defense. I mean, that's literally all they need to make this offense and defense essentially unstoppable, in my opinion. Yes, sir.
That's what we're talking about.
I think if there is one thing I do have a little bit of a hesitancy to commit to, is I think Mitchell does like the mid-range pull-up game a lot, especially when things get a little tight. And that's the only thing that kind of scares me a little bit, is that when things get tough, is he going to bog it down like Sexton did? Is he going to just pass up open threes and take a long two? I mean, I think I just have flashbacks to the Clippers series where that's basically what it looked like. They shot the most threes in the season, and then once they got to the playoffs, they just got scared and started taking a bunch of mid-range shots because they're getting closed out on and adjusted to.
I think that plays a lot into what the chemistry was like in Utah too. And I want to get into that a little bit as well when we come back. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. Chris Francis is here, Eli Kim is here, and I'm Nate Smith. And we're going to throw it to Chris, and he's going to give you his thoughts on the Cavs offense with Donovan Mitchell and what that's going to look like.
Well, what I wanted to mention was, well, first of all, you guys are spitting right now, because that's exactly what's going to happen, is the offense is going to look freaking amazing. I think the worry about Donovan Mitchell's mid-range game, I mean, I'm on dunks and threes right now, and they have him in the 85th percentile in mid-range shooting at 48%. So he's basically an elite mid-range shooter. So I'm completely unconcerned about him chucking mid-range shots. My thing.
Well, and to be honest with you, guys that can do that consistently, that's why they shine in the playoffs, because when things get tight, they still have another option.
Yep, exactly. So my only concern with Donovan Mitchell is this, and it speaks to your chemistry point, Nate, is that there was some insane stat about Donovan Mitchell, like, not passing to Gobert. Like, he only passed to Gobert like twice on a pick and roll, like all season or something. Like, it was some just bizarrely insane stat that you would not freaking believe, you know, if you'd heard it. And it was just basically, the thing was that Mitchell, like, his ongoing beef with, I mean, to be fair, I mean, he got COVID from him too. So, I mean, I could be pissed about that maybe, you know, but like the Rudy Gobert
from Typhoid thing, Rudy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, you know, the beef with Gobert, like, he's like, that's the thing that worries me about Mitchell is like, is he going to be a diva and freeze like Mobley out or freeze Allen out? Like, that shit cannot happen. Like, that's what's going to ruin this whole thing is if Mitchell's not making those reads, the proper reads, and getting the ball to our bigs at the rim. Because that's what's really going to make us go to the next level, is having Garland and Mitchell being able to get the ball to our bigs at the rim in so many ways. You know what I mean? Finding so many easy baskets that way, just like I think Eli was saying about the offense. So, like, my concern about Mitchell is, like, is he going to go diva mode and, like, start, you know, focusing on an agenda rather than playing winning basketball? But I guess, you know, their concerns are, you know, there's apparently, you know, I would assume Kobe's concerns about that are have been allayed, you know, by talking to Donovan Mitchell's people. So, you know, I think, you know, that's what, you know, that's what I have to say about the offense. I'll throw it to you guys for the defense.
I mean, just responding to that, all the reports were that he was ecstatic when he heard the trade. I don't think it's any secret that Utah is probably not the most popular place to play in the NBA. I mean,
shout out to Vernon Maxwell.
Here's the thing. Like, Cleveland has a much better rep than Utah right now. And Cleveland was kind of considered like Siberia for the NBA. And, you know, guys guys like Ricky and guys like Garland and, you know, and all the champion Cavs have talked up how great the fans are, how great the city is, that it's an easy place to play. And I think that helps a ton. And let's be honest, the fans in Utah have a reputation for being a-holes and not the most racially sensitive of fans. So I think that has worn on him for a long time. And obviously there's been stuff going on with Rudy for years. It was a weird situation. They've had weird coaches. They have weird ownership situations where their old owners were cheap. And then they sold to this tech billionaire who sold part of the team to Dean Wade, or not Dean Wade. Not Dwayne Wade.
The other Wade.
The other Wade. D Wade. What's his first name?
Dwayne
Wade. Sorry. anyway, I kept seeing, never mind. Anyway, it was a weird year. It was a weird season, weird situation. Then Quinn Snyder walked away because the situation was likely toxic.
No, you're right. They totally just left, right?
Who did they hire? It was a weird hire.
Oh, who did they hire? Is it hot Googling action?
Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah. This is everybody's favorite song. Kyle Whittingham. Oh, no, that's Utah football. I was like, that doesn't sound right. Will Hardy. No. Okay, as obscure a name.
Oh, from Boston, right?
Yeah.
He was a Boston assistant. Yeah.
Yeah.
So everybody, I guess hardcore NBA fans really like the hire as far as, like, just they like Will Hardy, you know, is that his name? But yeah, you're spitting right now. I'm telling you, man. Like,
yeah,
the situation was messed up in Utah.
Yeah, and I think it helps that the Cavs' oldest star is Donovan Mitchell, and I think he really chafed at, you know, being the offensive engine and Rudy Gobert just kind of being the guy there before. And it'll be interesting to see how much he embraces the team vibe, because the Cavs have definitely had that good vibes chemistry, and, you know, Kevin Love has really ushered in that by kind of stepping aside and becoming the older statesman.
And Rubio.
And Rubio, Rubio, absolutely. I mean, I think did you say, hear me say absolutely?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like, I think Rubio's the secret sauce to all this, to be honest. Like, his signing now becomes, I think,
on the floor and off for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, both, absolutely. His impact is just like, he's the vibes commander. That's who Rubio is.
He's first officer in charge of vibes.
Exactly. Thank you, sir. Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. You and I have just babbled forever. Eli, what do you think of the chemistry? Like, do you believe all the Utah stuff? Do you think it's going to improve, or are you worried that? Do you have worries, I guess, and I'll just leave it at that.
I think it's a good sign that Donovan Mitchell's already embracing the Cavs players on social media. But I also agree with your, like, he hated the situation in Utah. He hated Rudy Gobert. And he did, I mean, he showed maturity and leadership by never publicly throwing him under the bus, even though he had basically, everyone on his side, they agreed that Rudy Gobert was, like, the villain. And the league hates Rudy Gobert, but he never, like, came out in public and thrashed him, I felt like, even though he had every opportunity to. And, Chris, in regards to your stat, I looked it up. The crazy stat that everyone pointed to about Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert was that in the playoff series, he made two passes to Gobert. And one of them happened to be the game-winning shot that Gobert hit in, like, game two this year. And it was, like, one of two passes. Yes.
Two passes in the playoffs?
In the series, yeah.
In the series?
Well, yeah. That's just because Gobert's screens were so good. He was just getting all the way to the cup.
I love it. Yes, Nate on the defense. I love it. Yes, I rest my case.
Yeah, but absolutely. I think it's super encouraging that him and Garland have a little bit of they've already connected on social media. They've already
and they have national team history, right?
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say, Nate. Yeah, right.
Did
they play on Team USA together?
I think they both are trying out.
Yeah, well, I think Mitchell played on Team USA, but Garland was in camp, and we saw how good he looked, and then. Right. It was really a prelude to his season, all the rumors about how good he looked in camp and that he was kind of ready to take the next step.
Mm-hmm. And then let me drop a little bit of apparel knowledge. Rubio, Mobley, and Donovan Mitchell are all Adidas guys. So Rubio already tweeted, can't wait for the Don for to be in the Cavs colorways, which is... The Don is Donovan Mitchell's signature shoe deal. That's what they call a signature shoe. So I think Mobley will probably stop wearing the Dame Lillards and switch to that as well. So just another small chemistry point for those guys to all wear the same brand, go against Nike and MJ. But just one other minor point of chemistry that...
Wasn't KG an Adidas guy?
T-Mac was.
Yeah. KG was too. Yeah, because I remember him from the commercials. So, I mean, I'm just drawing another Mobley KG comparison.
I love it. Yes, sir. Eli the hype beast too. Nice.
Eli, are you a sneakerhead?
I was a little bit more active when I was younger, but after I bought a house, I'm definitely not as
It's hard to extract value as a sneakerhead.
It is, and it's like I just don't have time. Like I have to like, do all these things instead of meeting sketchy dudes at the mall to sell shoes.
Wow! You got man, you didn't stand in line. Ah, boo.
So, that is fantastic, Eli. I don't know. So give me a letter grade on this trade, Chris.
Oh, I'm going A-. A-. Easy A.
Eli? I mean,
the only minus, the minus is literally just a shout out to my boy, Lauri Markkanen, because I love him. He's awesome.
The big finish.
the big finish. You know, I was really looking forward to year two, Laurie. I mean, he was looking great in international play. Like, I just, you know, he beat the rap. You know, I feel like he's going to have like a Jordan Clarkson type renaissance post Cavs, you know, just he's going to make a name for himself, you know, and, you know, it started with a good season with the Cavs. So,
oh, I hope he's in the league for another 10 years. Like, like he had a bad reputation. You remember the beginning of the season when Bulls fans were just complaining about him nonstop?
Oh, my God. And I'm so sick of Bulls fans.
He was a delight this year. Like, I had no issues with him the entire season. You know, there were some issues at the beginning, but he was just embraced the role, played out of position, arguably. Just was fantastic to root for. I wish he was back with the team.
That dunk on Jokic.
The Joker dunk. And that wasn't the only time he went coast to coast this year.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah. I'm going to miss that A-minus.
A minus. Shout out to Laurie Markkanen. That was for you.
What about you, Eli? What's your letter grade?
Man.
Or you can even go non-letter grade and be like Evergreen University and give it a personal evaluation.
No, I'll give it a letter grade. I think I'm going to go with a B minus. I mean, I think that's a tough. Lot of us would be happy with B minuses in school. 80%. I mean, that's not bad.
Your mother would ground you for months if you.
Well, yes, because I'm Korean American. If I was a different ethnicity, they might also have given me $100. But I think that I just think the cost and the overall team building picture still kind of remains a little murky to me. And that's why I think when you're giving up five picks unprotected,
well, six, because Agbaji is a rookie.
Agbaji, correct. I think when you're giving up that much, you got to get Vanderbilt or Bogey, or at least alleviate your cap situation so that you're not like you're $10 million under the luxury tax instead of $3 million. Like, you just can't give.
Yeah, like,
all
why
that
couldn't
place.
They have flipped Chetty and Windler for Bogey, or even like I said, got Jared Vanderbilt or something. Like, throw me a freaking bone here, people. Like, get a small forward.
Yeah, and then like I said, the part that kind of makes it frustrating is, you know, if the Cavs knew they were going to get Donovan Mitchell and they were going to be a real player for him, they should have done it when Royce O'Neal was still on the Jazz. They could have made it a huge trade back then. Obviously prices change and demands change. So I get it. It's not linear and we can't.
Yeah. And in a way you can kind of, look at it as a similar situation to the way the Cavs got Laurie Markkanen last year,
where they
waited out the summer and then, you know, he was still sitting there and they had Nance was a little disgruntled and, you know, similarly Sexton this year. And they found a way, you know, credit to Rich Paul, he found a way to get Colin Sexton paid.
Yeah. Hey, that's actually a great point. 472 beats the hell out of 340, which is what the Cavs were at. So he nearly doubled his money, but they still blew it. They still got 75 cents on the dollar. Should have taken the deal last year.
Yeah. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. Hopefully not talking to myself like I just did for 2 minutes when I muted myself. And I'm here with Chris Francis and Eli Kim. And we gave our letter grades. I feel like I got to give this grade, needs improvement. I don't feel like is right, but lacking long-term vision. I think the biggest problem with this trade is this, you know, the only time we've ever seen a too small guard lineup win an NBA championship is the Toronto Raptors. And they had an all world a small forward named Kawhi Leonard, and that's part of what made that work. And then, you know, Pascal Siakam at the four, and then a who was playing five that year? Wasn't it Marc Gasol, I believe? A mix of Marc Gasol and
Siakam.
Siakam, and then who was the I can't remember, the guy that fought with Keish Chris, with Marquise Chris.
Danny Green was on that squad too.
Yeah, yeah, I'm trying to remember who the other center was, but I can't. Serge Ibaka. So
Serge Ibaka.
The one thing that concerns me more than anything is the Cavs have built a team of very good guards and very good bigs and a lot of question marks at the wing. You know, everybody on that on the Cavs roster has a question mark at the wing right now. I mean, I know you guys like Dean Wade. I like Dean Wade too, but he's never, you know, stayed healthy for a full season. And I'm just kind of wondering, you know, so my grade is, you know, lacks long-term vision. I'm kind of wondering, are there other wings out there that the Cavs could conceivably get? And I'm going to answer my own question and kind of throw a name out there that is a guy the Cavs should look at. And that is from the San Antonio Spurs. Now I can't remember his stupid name, but I should be prepared for these things. What's his name? That's going to drive me crazy. Hot Googling action. That's right. Spurs roster is, I know it's going to drive me crazy.
I got a name for you.
Josh Richardson.
Okay.
I mean, 10 points a game, solid 3-point shooting, good defender.
But I think he plays more of he's another tweener, you know.
Basically. Well, I'm with you, but beggars can't be choosers.
Sure, sure. No, you know.
They need shooting.
So I got a name for you. But I need Eli's capology to figure out if it could actually work. But how about Andrew Wiggins?
No. What is wrong with you?
He's a free agent. He's a free agent.
Next year. Not this year.
Next year.
The Cavs aren't going to have the cap to sign him, though.
Yeah, they won't anymore because...
Yeah, so how does Mitchell affect the cap? Like, because they were on pace to have like $30 million in cap space next off season.
Yeah, but now they won't because of Mitchell. Mitchell basically fills that space.
Yeah, yeah, and Kevin Love is dropping off, and Dylan Windler drops off, and I think Chetty
has one more year. He has a player option. Cavs have a team option. Sorry, yeah,
yeah. So Chetty could drop off, so they could clear a good bit of cap.
No, but they could. I mean, they could also renounce rights to Okoro next offseason. So that would clear up another $7 million, $8 million.
I don't think they would do that, though. He's too young.
Probably, and he's going to win that starting role and be awesome.
Unless they can make a splash in free agency, right? I mean.
Yeah, but the way it's set up, they almost have to do a sign and trade.
Yeah, they'd have to do the team option way before, I think. But I mean, in theory, I don't hate it. And Chris Fedor actually talks about Andrew Wiggins a lot more than I thought he would as a potential 3-and-D fit. So obviously he's getting information from the front office on something like that. So.
Ooh. But Eli just drop some like trade slop? I think he did, or some...
trade slop is the best.
But I think the problem is with Mitchell, it really does change your calculus on your team building and your cap that hasn't been taken into account at this point.
Yeah, so. And take us through the whole Mobley thing, because I kind of understand it, but I'm not sure all our listeners do.
Yeah, so in the CBA, there's a rule called the designated rookie extension rule, which basically means that each team can have two players where you give them a 5-year extension before they enter their fourth and final year of their rookie deal. So prime example, the Cavs have one, Darius Garland. Next year is his fourth season, but because they utilized this clause, they were able to give him a 5-year extension So basically they have 6 years of control entering the season because of his last year of his rookie deal and then the five-year extension he signed. The wonky rule is that you can only have two of these players on your team. You can trade for only one of these players at a time. But no, even if you trade for one, you can only have two max. So Donovan Mitchell also received a designated rookie extension. So the Cavs are currently capped out at the two, with at the limit of two. The interesting part is, and I think this is probably part of the reason why it's not a huge deal, if Donovan Mitchell were to opt out of his deal when he has a player option, that is the year that Mobley can sign the designated rookie extension deal. So that would allow Mobley to get a five-year extension, and I think Mitchell could then sign a four-year max level dollar-wise extension at that point too.
Yeah, and let's be honest, if the only way Mitchell's not opting out that season is as if he signs a massive extension, or which obviously in this scenario doesn't make sense, or, you know, he has an injury or just falls off the face of the earth. I don't see that, you know, the odds of any of those things happening are pretty low as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And then I think technically you're allowed to, which obviously a lot of people don't risk this, but if Mitchell were to opt in because of a catastrophic injury or some other unforeseen circumstance, Mobley would just be what Sexton is right now, where he'd just play a fourth year and then he'd be a restricted free agent, where you could still sign him to a five-year deal. But obviously that doesn't give players of his caliber a lot of comfort or happiness because they want that five-year fully max guarantee.
Oh, and why wouldn't you? Yeah. The other question I have around that is a designated rookie, is that a higher salary because of that? Or if he were to only sign a four-year deal, could they pay him the same salary, but it would be over 4 years instead of five?
No. So there is a kicker.
Okay.
You can earn the reason you want to do that is so you can be super max eligible with the team that drafted you. So
got it.
That's why it's interesting because all the agents tweet out the dollar amount, including if they were to reach all the incentives and trigger that number. So like you'll see like John Morant's deal say like 5 year, $222 million, I think. But unless he's like all NBA two out of the next 4 years, he's at 5 years, $182 million, which is where Garland is also at right now, which is the max number anyway.
Well, and the other thing about the whole thing is, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen with the new CBA. And of course, the players and the league both have an opt out by this January, I believe, to renegotiate starting next summer. So it's definitely, you know, who knows what the future looks like. So, you know, going for the now makes some sense. Hey, at least in my mind, you know, don't agree with me all at once.
Anyway, I totally agree because, I mean, right now, as it currently stands, if there's a new CBA, like Donovan Mitchell's contract all of a sudden looks like a bargain.
Oh, yeah. And I think it maybe not so much the CBA, but when the new TV deal kicks in, which is, I think, three seasons away, that's going to be major.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't see a huge spike with this new CBA. I think the owners and the players are going to push back on each other pretty hard. And I don't think the BRI changes much. But what I think owners, it's going to be a twofold thing. I think owners are very much looking at this Kevin Durant situation and not very happy about it. And I think the other part of that is if I'm the commissioner and I'm concerned about the future of the league, these lousy teams controlling all the draft picks concerns me a great deal long term. I don't think that's great for the league. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, and interesting enough, a lot of people thought like we're destined for a stalemate, like this year, because both parties have the option to like
opt out.
But I think lately the feedback and like the rumblings from the big national guys like Zach Lowe, John Hollinger, is that both parties are probably not going to opt out this year because they know that the TV deal rights is more important. I think everyone wants to see what those numbers look like, and then they'll fight over the basketball related income. And I think the owners are just playing the long game and saying, hey, you know what? We'll suck it up this year, but when we know there's a bigger pie, we might back away from that 50-50 deal we did, you know, the last CBA negotiations that led to a lockout. So I think that's the game plan and what the rumblings have been lately in the podcasts I've listened to.
Interesting. And I think the other big thing is the would be also expansion, and as well as whether they get rid of the age, the 19-year-old age cap, you know, 1 year out of high school. Is the other big thing. And with that, we'll be back in a minute for, I won't say the second hour, but at least start the second hour. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Cats Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with Eli Kim and Chris Francis. And I wanted to talk about what do you think the ceiling for this team is this season and beyond? And kind of, you know, regular season and postseason, where do you see, now that we've added, you know, Donovan Mitchell, if you look at just straight, like, let's pick a metric like EPM, and you just add wins that Lauri Markkanen provided versus wins that Donovan Mitchell provided last season, that's five additional wins for the Cavs, which is a big number. Where do you see
the Vegas moved the over under accordingly?
Oh, did they? Yeah. It would have been, boy, I wish I'd have bet the over on the old line, but
I know, ain't that the truth? It was like, it was literally six free wins. Like you got, well, like you just said, like five to six free wins. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the difference.
Yeah. Well, I feel that my back in the napkin, analytics were pretty spot on there. So, but what about you? So what's the line at now?
I believe it's at 48.5 or 48.
Okay. Gosh, I have a hard time not picking the over there now. But that might just be optimism. Wow.
It's funny because when it comes down to brass tacks.
No.
When it comes down to brass tacks, you are definitely a fan.
But let me caveat this by saying, I don't put nearly as much stock in the regular season win-loss record as I do in how the playoffs shape out. And I'm not sure that picture is as clear as the games. How many wins you got?
What's your ceiling? What's your ceiling? What you got?
For wins?
Or just outcome?
I'm gonna give the ceiling at 53 wins.
Damn. What did 53 wins get the Eastern Conference last year? That's like a top four seed, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good question. What about you, Eli? How many wins?
Man.
51 wins would have gotten us the two seed.
Oh, wow. Okay, maybe I'm being optimistic.
I'm saying. It's like you're
I think I'm at like 40. I'm at 48 wins, I think.
You're right on the line, huh?
Yeah, he's right on the line.
I think there, before the trade, I was actually thinking there might be a little bit of a regression because teams will be more prepared for Tower City. But now, because the Cavs don't have Tower City, it's going to be another adjustment. Like, teams can't rely on the same film as last year because the team has just changed so dynamically. That I think the Cavs will sneak up on people with how good that backcourt is and how good that frontcourt still is. But that being said, I think the East has gotten a lot better.
I think COVID won't be as impactful because now players who have the vaccine and aren't significantly symptomatic can play. So I feel like there won't be as much wonkiness with the COVID injuries. And I just think there's going to be a lot more parity this year, even at the top. So I think 53 wins might be the one seed this year. That's kind of my hot take on how the season goes.
Yeah, I 53 wins was the one season.
Eli, I don't think we got a season from you at all. You said a lot of things, but what's the ceiling?
In terms of wins?
In terms of wins. My bad.
I mean, I can give you a scenario. Outcome. I think the ceiling is that they make it to the second round this year. Because I'll be honest, I still think the top four is better than Cleveland. Like Miami, Milwaukee,
Boston, and Philly.
I would say those. I wouldn't say the Cavs are better than any of those guys, assuming health for everybody. But I do think this move puts them ahead of the Bulls significantly. I think
the Raptors.
I think it makes them pretty even with the Raptors and the Hawks. Like, I think it should be a dogfight between those three teams, I feel
like. Yeah, well, and then you got Brooklyn sitting there.
Yeah.
Like, you talk about the team that's going to be most positively affected by the changes with COVID. It's going to be Brooklyn.
Correct. But I'm still just not
– But they're
I'm
old, I'm still though. Just not convinced. They're old.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You think that falls apart and they end up moving – Durant.
Yes, sir, mid-season. I am praying on Brooklyn's downfall. Down with Kevin Durant, down with Kyrie Irving, down with Brooklyn Nets. They're going to be in the gutter. Mark my words.
So you think they find a place to send KD?
I think so. Now that you say that, I feel like that kind of rings true. Let's file that away.
Interesting.
Does KD end the season with Brooklyn?
Yeah, that's a good question. What about you? What's your wins and what's your end of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys. It's so hard to judge. I think I want to say that they're definitely in the playoffs. I actually agree with Eli. I think the ceiling is second round. Like, that's the second round, possibly a conference finals. So I think that's the ceiling. I mean, Trae Young did it. So even if it took Ben Simmons not willing to dunk a basketball, they still made it.
In a bubble year.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Well, I guess it wasn't a bubble year.
Semi-bubble. It was a half bubble.
Semi-bubble.
There you go. But if we're talking long term, if we want to talk long term, this is a championship squad. I'm going to put all my chips on the table right now. This is a championship squad. You're telling me you assembled four all-stars before the prime of their career, having all this time to grow together, this team could be trouble for like a decade if they wanted to be. If they wanted to see this through, stick together through Evan Mobley's rookie extension, this team could be trouble for the next decade. We could be ruling the conference for the next decade. That's how strongly I feel about this move. And also, it's a vote of confidence, honestly, in Garland and Mobley. I'm supremely confident in them. And then they add in an all-star in the prime of his career to it. So, we got four all-stars.
See, to me, the whole ceiling revolves around what we think, what Mobley ends up being. If Mobley ends up being as good as we think he can be, if he is Kevin Garnett who can shoot threes, then that is a really accurate depiction of where they're at. If he is strictly an inside player and doesn't, find that ability to find that extra gear of scoring, because I think he has a higher ceiling than like a Chris Bosh, And I think he can be a guy that can, you know, average, you know, 22, 10 and 5. Maybe not be the top scorer, but be like what we used to call him, Slim Duncan.
Yeah.
I think that's a team that could be generational, but I think that's a huge if, and we got to see how Evan Mobley develops. And even if he becomes that elite forward, they are still, to me, a forward short, and they got to figure out a way to get another one without a lot of draft capital. That's the one part that the other part that hurts about this. The only way I see now, it does set them up for maybe in 2 years, you know, maybe drafting a Bronny James and making a reunion happen there. But we'll see. I don't know. Eli, what's your long-term cap on this team? Ceiling.
Ironically, I'm a little worried about the long-term more than the short, medium-term. Because of the cap situation and the lack of assets going forward, I don't know how the Cavs are going to luck into a 6'8" good player who can shoot and play defense. It's
it happens.
It does.
All they had to do was draft Tari Eason.
But they
would have all they had to do.
Yeah, but then they would have had to trade him.
Yeah.
Oh no, you're right. Dang it.
Yeah.
So it's I think the realistic routes are potentially another consolidation trade or taking a bad contract in the near future.
And I think the big thing is you've got to do what these teams have done. You have to find talent that you can bring in for low money from unexpected places. You know, look at the way Joe Ingles came into the league. You look at the way Miami added shooters and wings out of, you know, second round draft picks and guys they got out of, you know, overseas and out of the draft. I think those guys are there. Kobe Altman.
I feel like you're talking about Chetty Osman.
No.
I don't know who he's talking about. He's talking about Luke Travers, man.
Maybe I am talking about Luke Travers or, you know, season 3 Stranger Things star Luke Travers. But you've got to find a way to add that talent at the bottom of your roster, develop it up, and make it, you know, someone that's impactful on the court. Miami does that.
Actually freaking me out. Like, Luke Travers, like, he was unironically saying Luke Travers season 3.
No, I was... What were you saying?
I was saying that you it was thinly veiled that you actually believe Luke Travers season three, let's go.
No, I said season 3 of Stranger Things.
Oh,
because he looks just like the brother with the mullet and the stash.
It just kind of worked both ways.
I mean, it does. It works on multiple levels.
Yes, it does.
But, you know, Miami does that. Milwaukee does that. The Spurs have always done that. The Grizzlies do that. The Cavs have not been great about that. And they got a lot of guys on this roster. I
mean, Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens are success
stories. Yeah, but this is what I have to say. Is it's put up or shut up time for those guys. They either got to impact winning or the Cavs are going to go find somebody else because the Cavs are no longer in development mode. They're in win mode. When you got three all-stars, you're in win mode.
I totally agree with that. It's a pivotal year for
both. And I think it's much harder to do that, much easier to do that when the expectations aren't there and you're Lamar Stevens or Dylan Windler or you know, Dean Wade, than it is when the lights are on and everybody's watching and the competition is amped up and it's not a random night in Toronto. It's you're playing on national TV against a playoff team and teams are gunning for you because you got three all-stars. That's going to be different.
You know, it's funny that you just mentioned Dylan Windler and theoretical Dylan Windler is the perfect fit.
Oh gosh.
It sucks. It's just driving me crazy. It's like, it's going to drive me.
Schrodinger's Windler.
Yes, exactly. Oh my God. I mean, like,
but he is simultaneously hurt and not hurt.
Yeah. I'm so dead serious. Like, we haven't talked about his name at all, but like, he's literally the ideal player to put in that role. And it's just, you know, no confidence. The organization has demonstrated very little confidence, and he's really not even made really that much hay when he had a chance. So it's just, yeah, I totally agree. 100% agree. Put up or shut up time for that trio. It's Dean Wade, Dylan Windler, Lamar Stevens, right?
I mean, it could be. Yeah. Somebody's got to step up, and whoever does, if somebody does, they're going to end up being, you know, the next Joe Ingles that kind of came from out of nowhere to be a really good player. And if they don't, the Cavs got to find somebody else. They don't have time to wait for these guys anymore. You know,
preach it, coach.
Yeah. And with that, we'll be right back to close this bad boy out. We are back. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with Chris Francis, and Eli Kim is walking his dog. So we will get him.
Put him on blast immediately. I love it.
Funny thing about that, didn't Eli leave to walk the dog before the podcast started? Like, it's 12 at night. Like, how many times does your dog go out in an evening? I worry about Eli's sleep schedule.
I think we know who rules the roost at Eli's house, and it's not Eli. It's not Eli.
Oh, man. He's not here to defend himself. So.
Exactly. I love it. Take your shots now. Take them right now, or forever hold your peace, Nate.
I feel like we'd be a little remiss if we didn't wish a melancholy happy trails to, you know, first of all, Colin Sexton, who we watched for the last 4 years of his career, and many hoped would be he was the first pick of the second non-LeBron era. Yeah. And it was a big deal because they got him in the Kyrie trade. And now that pick seems like one of many picks they sent back to Danny Ainge. But I'm wishing Colin Sexton success. You know, it's hard for me to root against Danny Ainge, but for Colin Sexton, but the guy never, you know, he didn't do everything we wanted on the court, but he almost always played hard.
Oh,
at least offensively.
Like, no, I mean, he needs a little more time is what he needs. He just needs a little more time to really get down the passing aspect of the game.
If he
could just improve like literally 20% on the passing game, he would make that leap into the conversation of Devin Booker or Jamal Murray or Donovan Mitchell. He's just not there yet, you know.
Well, I would say in a big guard that can handle the primary point guard duties,
sure,
would help him a ton.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I mean, I still have. A sliver of faith is him developing into that heliocentric, you know, all tools offensive player. But he just needs time, and he got robbed of a huge critical development season. You know, that was his age 23 season that he got robbed of almost completely. So he's got a steep uphill road to climb. Losing that year. And but shout out to the Cavs, honestly, because they didn't do him dirty. You know, they sent him to a place where he can get, you know, the developmental minutes he needs to really take that leap, you know. And so like you said, man, like, he always played hard. Like, I was a huge, you know,
repped Cleveland. His teammates seemed to love him.
Yeah, like, he was, you know, he's a good dude, man. Like, he just came across as a really good dude, a hard worker. How can you not respect a hard worker? Like, dude, you know, loves fucking basketball. Sorry,
that's a weird fetish, but,
you know. Thank you. That was good. That was good, Nate.
I'll be here all week.
Yeah. Go good.
Yeah, and Lauri Markkanen, similarly, you know, we talked about him a little, but I just, that guy grew on me immensely, and he was such a perfect guy with Allen and Mobley to just kind of be, like, he was a 7-foot glue guy, and I think he's so underrated.
He's a very skilled big.
And, I really hope that the Jazz move him for Pitts. I feel terrible for him that he's going to a non-competitive team.
Well, no, I mean, I think this is a real opportunity for him to expand his game. You know, like, he kind of started expanding his game in Cleveland, you know, being at the three gives him a lot more perimeter ball opportunities. You know what I mean? And he got them that he didn't really get in Chicago. So I think there's an opportunity here for him to expand his game. I do think he'll get traded, though. I think you're right on the money. I think Danny Ainge wants to feature Lauri for a couple years, maybe, or just a year, and then pawn him off for like 2 first-round picks.
Well, he just doesn't fit their timeline.
Exactly. No, yeah. I totally 100% agree. So, yeah, he's going to feature him and then hopefully spin him. So that I think that's...
Yeah, I think that's the plan with Sexton as well.
Yeah.
Although Tank Commander Sexton, we've seen what that does for an organization. It gets him a lot of high picks.
Evan Mobley, baby.
Darius Garland.
Darius Garland, you're right.
Yeah.
Darius, we got our core. Thank you, Colin. You know, Young Bull. Young Bull, you were a good soldier.
He was. Eli, you back? Now, where's he walking this dog?
Man, this dog is spoiled.
I feel like he's walking to Cleveland so he can meet up with Dave Wood's dog. And that's a long walk. So I got to tell my trivia story, we will pause it here, and I'll wait for Eli to be right back. Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. I'm Nate Smith here with the esteemable Chris Francis and Elijah Kim. Not that Chris is esteemable and Eli isn't, it. So they're both esteemable. So, or estimable, I don't know. Anyway. Welcome back. We were just, while Eli was walking his dog, wishing Colin Sexton and Lauri Markkanen a melancholy bon voyage. Eli, any parting thoughts about Lauri or Colin?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty bummed that we're not going to see year two of Lauri Markkanen in Cleveland. He really grew on me. He reminds me a lot of me, a good tall three-point shooter who should play inside more, but likes to hang around the perimeter. So,
well, it's because you're such a connector.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just so athletic and finish really well too. So, but all kidding aside, I'm pretty bummed about Markkanen not being here. All kidding aside, even though I was never the biggest Sexton fan in terms of the type of player he was, I do have to give him credit. He seemed to always work hard. He seemed to be pretty likable. He never complained publicly. He did what he thought was best to make the Cavs a winnable team. And, you know,
hey, I'm glad he got paid.
Yeah. And I am too.
Because he did kind of get hosed.
He did. And it was, you know, it was no fault of his own. It just, he had a freak injury and he was pretty healthy for the first 3 full seasons of his career, and it just happened to be unlucky. So I'm glad he got paid, and, you know, he gets a fresh start. And, you know, ironically, everyone compared him to Donovan Mitchell because of his height.
And now they really are trying to do it.
Yeah. So good for Sexton. And
Sexton play with Jordan Clarkson his rookie year?
They did, yeah.
Yeah, so he's at least got one familiar face there.
Yep.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you, and, you know, my answer was from the Spurs was, this is how important it must be, Josh Richardson. And Chris's was Andrew Wiggins. Anybody the Cavs could add to kind of bring some shooting or some competition to that small forward spot?
All right. Well, I'm actually going to go in the bargain bin. So these are still free agents, and the pickings are very slim.
Indeed.
But I'm going to throw two names out there that I think in the past, I think at some point, I think you and I both would have liked some of these players as rotation pieces when the Cavs were more competitive. But the first name I'm going to throw out there is Tony Snell.
I knew you were going to say Tony Snell.
He always kills the Cavs, no matter what team he's on.
Well, and he led the NBA in 3-point shooting like two seasons ago. And yeah, he's a really good 3-point shooter.
And he's long. And he's actually, I thought he was like 35, but he's only 30 years old. I mean, it's not like.
He is aged in dog years by all reports.
Correct. But as the other guy who I had to look this up, but he is actually signed up the James Ennis bandwagon. I know you and I were on that for a while, but he does have a team, so we can't bring him.
Is he the other in name. The NBA or is he in China or in Europe?
He's in Brooklyn, actually.
Oh, he's on Brooklyn? I didn't know that.
I think so.
He finally got picked up and he's finally with Brooklyn, huh?
I think so. Let me double check that.
Googling but, action.
Oh, I'm wrong. He Three plays times for. Is nice. He's in a different league now.
The VTB. California Penal.
No. Damn. He's in the Russian league.
Damn, Dave. That was hard.
You know I'm kidding. That is a not a knock on Ennis. That is a major league joke. Yeah.
Oh, he's in the Russian
way
league.
Way to so bring it back. That was excellent, Nate. That was.
He's in what league?
He's in the Russian league.
Is he though? Like, didn't they disband that?
Yeah. Like,
oh, it's not disbanded. Oh, they're just not allowed in Euro play, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's super weird. Okay,
but so because he's not eligible. The other player I had was Jeremy Lamb. That's another name.
I saw him today, and I thought about that. I was like, that's a guy worth maybe taking a flyer on.
Yep. So those are kind of two of the bargain bin guys.
So here's another idea for you. Would you roll out the would you make a phone call to Carmelo Anthony?
Oh no, I would
not. Wow. Oh no, I would not.
That's spicy and shoot. I like it.
I don't like it because I feel like he's the player no matter what time it is. It's Melo time.
but now he can be the irrational confidence guy, the 3-point guy. He's a 3-point guy now.
But see, the thing is, he tried to do that with LeBron, and LeBron couldn't make him look passable. So, I can't imagine. Awesome.
I mean, you're probably right. Let's be honest. You're probably right. I'm just saying, I just want to kind of give credit to Nate, you know, for, you know, going outside his comfort zone.
Well, yes, I like
literally the worst.
Nate's embracing his inner Hooper, and I feel like we should support him.
Nate's all about the vibes today.
Apparently.
That's what's up. That's what's
apparently.
Up.
I'm all about chemistry today. I'm like DeMarcus Aldridge in a wig. I'm a Hooper.
DeMarcus, did you just do DeMarcus Cousins, Lamar.
No, Aldridge? Don't you? Oh, DeMarcus, I did. No, who was? No, I did. DeAndre Jordan. I'm thinking DeAndre Jordan. God, I'm so bad with names. Remember, he was in those Hoopers commercials. Gosh, I'm the worst.
Oh man. Remember when he got locked in?
Locked him in Dallas.
Yeah. Good times.
Good times. Okay. So I do have a trivia story and question for you guys. But this is after the trivia, who will lead the NBA in assists this year? And I'll give you a hint. His name rhymes with Marius Garland. So that's my first
subtle.
Trivia question.
Real subtle.
Yeah. So I play bar trivia. I've played during the summer. We've won a couple times. It's a pretty fun format. You get like 10 questions the first round, or 10 or 5 points first round, 10 the second, 3 the third, and 4 the fourth. And then one of those you can double down on. So you have a possibility of, you know, getting a little extra credit each round. And then before the final round, you have a 10-point question that has like five possible answers, and you get 2 points for each one, right? So we've been doing that. We've won a couple times, and they have this thing called the 105 Club, which is kind of the elite tier that you get. And if you get into the 105 Club, you get your name engraved on a piece of wood that says the 105 Club. And that's a pretty big honor, I'm not going to lie. And so going into Final Jeopardy, we've been killing it. We had 55 points. And you can bet your whole stack. So we were eligible to get up to 110, which would have put us, you know, well in the pantheon there. You know, we're talking Melo territory in terms of NBA significance. And we had our final question. I'm going to give you guys the question, and no hot Googling action. You can't cheat on this one. That would be lame. So don't Google this one. But, and of course they have a hard and fast no cell phone rules at trivia here. But America's first multimillionaire was John Jacob Astor. What industry did he build his fortune in?
I'm going to say shipping.
And I will give you another hint. He is a part of Michigan history. That was the other hint that we got. So,
wasn't he a car guy?
I'm gonna say oil.
Okay, so, the where it came up for us was that somebody said that he was on the Titanic on our team. You know, looking up after, he was not, but supposedly this person's memory, he was in the movie and he was wearing, and he was in the Titanic. So our guess was lumber, because lumber was a huge industry in Michigan, especially on the West Coast. Unfortunately, that was the wrong answer. The correct answer was fur. Fur, yeah. His trading post in on Mackinac Island, or on the Missouri River, was so profitable that it only took four decades for Astor to become America's first multimillionaire. So there you go. So we were relegated to 0 points, and may God have mercy on our soul. And so the only thing we get is the ability to suggest a category for the next week. So. If you have any ideas, let me know.
So I do want to go on your Titanic point. Your buddy is right, but it's actually his great-great-grandfather. That's the guy that's the person who died on the Titanic.
Okay.
His great-great-grandfather. That's John J.
Okay.
So the guy that you guys were supposed to guess, the fur guy, is the first. And I think the guy that died on the Titanic is the
fur. Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah. Did he name his kids George, like George Foreman, and that's why they all have the same name?
They're all, I think they're either John or William, and they all have the same name for five generations, I think.
Interesting. Okay. And so he was wearing a big beaver hat. I didn't want to give that away in the Titanic movie. So that's why the guy thought he, so we turned in our question, then he thought of fur after we turned it in, and he's been kicking himself ever since. So that's my trivia story. Eli or Chris, anything to pitch, or have we burned it out enough?
I'll give a shout out to Dad, since he's there you go.
Nice.
Me and Nate and Eli saying what's up. Shout out there.
I feel like Eli needs to shout somebody out here too. Or should I say Uncle Eli needs to shout somebody out here.
Yeah. I guess I'll throw a shout out to my little nephew, my first His name is Nehemiah. Our family is very big on biblical names. So
nice. That's a good name. I like
that. That is a Nehemiah and Elijah. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, like it's because my brother's name is Ezra, and Nehemiah is the book nice. After Ezra in nice. The Bible.
So, well, you know what that name is? It's better than Ezra.
That's shout a good out one. To better than Ezra.
But ironically, the nickname we use for him is Nemo.
Nice.
So we all call him Nemo.
I like that. I like
nice.
That.
Nice. That's good stuff. I like so. That. And yeah, and with that, we will, when's training camp kick off? About
4 weeks.
I don't even think it's that long.
Maybe less.
I think it's 2 weeks.
Holy crap. Where?
Because first game is mid-October. So, yeah.
No, early. Yeah. Well, yeah. First game's mid. The first preseason game is in a month. Yeah. 34 days.
Wow. Awesome. So, yeah. Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.